You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay.
Hey there, welcome back. Thank you for coming on back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making us part of your daily grind. This is the Friday show, kind of a grab bag Friday. We got a lot of little things going. I'm basically going to spend this whole podcast yelling at people. I'm going to spend some of it yelling at people about rumors, yelling at idiots on TV and on the internet, and then we'll get you some health updates. First, let's introduce ourselves. We are the Raining Jays. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, Samuel Jamison Packard III.
You know I like to yell at people. You know I like a good yell.
Yeah, it's just one of those. I'm in a yelling kind of mood. I mean, I'm in a cranky old man kind of mood, so people will incur my wrath in this podcast. So let's start with the simple stuff. Let's start with the simple things. Aaron Baines had surgery today. He broke his fourth metacarpal, and that bone, if you want to know what a metacarpal is, I looked it up on Wikipedia, so now you're going to know what it is. So you have your finger. There's the three bones in your fingertip, that middle bone, and then the one right. And then once you get below that knuckle, that last knuckle, that bone in the middle of your hand, that's the metacarpal. So he broke.
Which one's my fourth one? My pointer finger or my pinky?
No, the fourth one is your ring finger.
What? Oh, I guess they're including the thumb there. All right.
Starts with your thumb.
How the hell did he break that?
He got its impact. He got an elbow cracked down from DeAndre Ayton.
And strong elbows.
It's not a hard bone to break. I actually broke my fourth metacarpal on my right hand. I didn't realize that was the metacarpal until I looked it up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did that once in college. That can happen a lot of different ways. It's not a huge bone. So yeah, it's like a chicken bone practically. That elbow comes on down and there you go. You get a nice little crack and he's out 4 to 6 weeks. They put a pin in there to help with the healing. So, you know, he's an Australian, like you said last night on the post game podcast, he's probably going to, it'll be on the 4 weeks.
He'll be back by Christmas, man.
Yeah. Like he probably wants to play with it tomorrow. Like he just wants to say, you know what? I'm good. Let's just go back out there. So
I bet he'll still make threes with a cast on. How ugly his shot is.
It's his non-shooting hand. I mean, I've seen suggestions online that they should just like put a big wrap around it and he should just have a club and just club people. That would be awesome. I've seen like in football, like that's advantageous. Like who was it that blew his hands off with the
Jason Pierre-Paul?
Yes, JPP. Yeah. And they did a whole club. Like he just had a big like mace at the end of his hand. Like that would be an awesome thing to have in basketball for a center, a big guy like that. He just thump people over the top of the head.
He'd be really bad at catching the basketball, which is the only drawback I see. But other than that, yeah, I'm all for it.
Well, it'd be like the when I was in high school, we did the drills when I was playing baseball. They gave us like that flat paddle. I don't know if you ever
played. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's taught you the soft hands. So they'd shoot. When I was in high school and we had – this is a nightmare. We had one of those multi-purpose floors. So it was like that rubber. And when it was raining out, we'd have to have baseball practice inside. What they would do is they would take the pitching machines and fire them up. We had these little rubber baseball.
The yellow ones. The yellow with dimples.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And they would fire those at us from one end of the basketball court to the other. So we're at one baseline and the pitching machine was on the other baseline. And they would tilt the pitching machine down and fire those things up.
Short hop.
Oh, my God. And they'd give us these wooden paddles, and they'd be like, okay, you feel the ball. It's supposed to teach you those soft hands, and you bring it in. And all I remember is somehow those the spin on the ball, it would take two hops, and that second hop, it would take off at you. It was like torture. I was ready to go.
Oh, no, that sounds awesome. I used to love fielding practice. And so inside, my coach used to reward you if you just, like, would still dive for the ball. We'd have a competition, a fielding competition, and I would just always be diving after the ball in the gym because we also had sliding practice in the gym. We practiced diving back to first base after taking leads just in the gym. It was terrible.
Lunacy.
It was insane.
That is torture.
We did not win a lot of games, but man, could we field indoors. Oh man, we were the best indoor fielding team in the league.
I mean, that's like masochistic. That's like a high school coach with a lot of problems at home, and he's taking them out on you guys at the court.
Oh, yeah. Our coach was not the best.
We never did that. We did a lot of crazy stuff. Baseball was the worst, actually, when it came to, like, the workouts indoors. Oh, my God. But anyway, yeah, so Aaron Baines could do, like, that type of thing with the club on his hand. I like it.
Yeah. In digression, Aaron Baines should play with a club on his hand.
That's my takeaway from all of this. Al Horford also out for the game Friday night against the Bucks, and every time it's funny. We said from the beginning that it's going to take a few games, and every time we have an update, it's like, well, it's still going to be probably a couple more games. And then when it's actually a couple more games, people are like, oh my God, he's out again. And
no, that was my exact reaction.
Like I didn't expect. I've been saying all along that my guess would be Christmas. Like I wasn't expecting him back for the Bucks game. I want him back for the Bucks game, especially now with Baines being out. But I never expected Horford back for the Bucks game unless things really, really progressed. I would have been surprised if he was there. But here, people, I spent how much time on the podcast saying it's not that big of a deal. I just don't see it as that big of a deal. It's something that they're going to try to manage. And I think they're really trying to get as much mileage out of this as possible. So they're going to continue to try to manage this. Maybe it'll linger. I don't know. Maybe it's worse than I think. It's possible, certainly. But I'm just not that worried from what they're saying. Unless it's not what they're saying and it's something else, then that's a different story. But if I'm taking it at face value and it is this patellofemoral pain syndrome, then it's going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take time to strengthen that area. It's just going to take a little bit of time. So I'm not freaking out, but I see people freaking out like crazy all the time now.
See, my biggest problem is that I'm no medical doctor. I know about two things. I know about crime and the criminal justice system, and then good basketball nicknames. But I'm no doctor, so I have no idea what, like, his injury is. And so I was one of the people just initially thinking that keeping him out a couple games would just be like a rest scenario, and he would, like, be out for two. And I said last night, I think I expected him back, but really I have no idea. I don't know how you rehab an injury, and we have no idea what the seriousness of the injury is. Long term, it doesn't seem like the biggest deal, but the Celtics really need him. Like, we'll talk about this in the next segment, but people are going crazy talking about, like, how disappointing the Celtics are. I was like, yeah, they don't have Al Horford. Al Horford is, like, one of the most important players on the Celtics and a key reason why their offense has been at all decent, and he's the best defensive player on the team. It's like, where is Lou Maloney? You know what I mean? Like, this is this is when the evidence of Al Horford being damn good is clear, and he's the straw that stirs the drink. He's, like, the thing that makes everything go. And so it's a little it's a little concerning just because I set the expectation that I wanted him back against the Bucks. But in the long term, you're right. But I'm not surprised to see the Celtics struggle, especially against Andre Drummond and, like, the size of the Pistons, and then DeAndre Ayton, when they don't have their best center. And now with the Baines injury, it's just compounded, and going to have to turn to other guys. But yeah, of course they're playing poorly without Al Horford. Al Horford's really fucking good.
Yeah, he really is. Look, no Baines, no Horford, no Marcus Morris. Like, those three guys, we said it in the post game, and I'll save this for the next segment, because this plays into that conversation. All I'm going to say is that, yes, I am in agreement. Like, I want Al Horford back. I want him to be on the court against the Bucks, because I think He is super important to what we do against Milwaukee. Spacing the floor, drawing Brooke Lopez out of the lane, just really opening things up. And if they're going to continue to sag on pick and rolls and try to protect the paint at all costs, having another guy out there that's reliable from three is going to be very important. It's also why I think they're going to start Daniel Theis against the Bucks tomorrow, because they just need a guy that is a threat from three as a stretch five.
But Theis can't do, like, play Brooke Lopez off the floor like Horford can. Now, I'm a little bit like, I would expect the Bucks would be majorly favored heading into the game just because of that, because Horford basically made Brooke Lopez unplayable, but with Theis, he's just not that dynamic. And so, and that's when the Bucks have been there at their best, when they don't have to go Giannis at the five. So, yeah. It could be bad news Bears tomorrow.
It could be. It could be. So we'll just have to see. The Celtics are very, very shorthanded, and unfortunately, Horford continues to miss time with that left knee. And again, I'm not concerned, but I guess the question, and we'll have to pose this question tomorrow. They have a shoot around in the morning, and we'll just have to ask if there's anything, any complications or anything like that, and we'll get a better answer. We'll just have to keep asking the questions to see if there's a better answer, or if this is just a continued progression or a continued rehab, and it's up to the doctors to say when they feel good about him playing. That's all I can say. So one other quick injury note, and this may be of relevance. The Celtics did not include Gershon Yabusele on the injury report, which is a quicker recovery from the sprained ankle that looked pretty bad. But if he's not on the injury report, that I assume means he's available to play, unless it was some sort of oversight. But they're usually pretty good about that. And he was on the injury report for the Suns game, and now he's not. So I assume that Gershon is ready to play.
You know, Gershon's a hefty boy, and you don't expect him to recover from an ankle injury that quickly, but maybe his ankles are so thick that they're stronger than the average one. So, I mean, that's a good sign. They need big bodies. I expect him, if he's not on the injury report, I expect him to play and get, like, at least 10 minutes.
I wouldn't be surprised. His ankles have been used to carrying that big frame around for a long
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
This is not like they're new to that burden. Like, they know what they're doing.
They're strong because of it.
Yes, yes. So they're stronger than the average ankle because they got to support that booty.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that was the highlight of my professional career, that last line. We're going to come back. I'm going to yell at idiots because there are a lot of idiots out there, and I don't want to because I don't want to keep attention, but like at the same time, I really want to. So taking idiots to task when we come back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So, people have things to say. There's a million outlets. There's written, there's video, there's TV, there's just a million places, and everybody's got content and time to fill. So that means that some people have carved out their niches as being professional provocateurs. They are intentionally saying stupid things to rile us up and get reactions like the one they're getting out of me right now.
It's working. They did their job.
Did their job. And I spent all day avoiding. I didn't tweet about Max Kellerman. But we're here. We've got a podcast. We have time to fill. We've got content to put out there.
And let's say some outrageous shit.
Yeah. Like, I can't live with myself. If I went out there and said, maybe the Celtics are better off without Kyrie Irving, as if like getting like he has been. The setup was Kyrie's been awesome. They've been better with Kyrie on the floor. Kyrie has been willing them to wins, but I wonder if they're better off without him. Like, what?
He literally provided zero evidence or zero like statements to back up his claim. He just said, you might want to trade him for AD. Or do you really want to give him a supermax with that knee? And then he said that knee a couple of times to let you know that it was something to be scared of, But it was literally just like the most nonsense. He just like spent 45 seconds describing how good Kyrie Irving is and his great qualities, and then said, you might be worse off without him. And that's the thing, is because I can see, like, I can kind of see where he's coming from, because the earlier in the clip, he basically just had Stephen A trashing the Celtics and saying they, like, they really have to worry. No one's playing well. There's just like, there's so much reasons to panic for the Celtics. Like, they're not going to do it. They're not the same team. And just like completely ignoring the context of like, there's no excuse to lose to the Suns. Well, one, the Suns are playing better. Two, they were without any of like big men, like, and these things happen in the NBA. So you have the Stephen A take. And if you want to make it entertaining, you got to respond with something kookier. You can't respond like if Max Kellerman just responded like, well, I think Aaron Baines and Al Horford being out was a major impact there. And the Suns have been playing better over the past four games. Like, that's not the kind of television that the fine producers of First Take are looking for.
It's true. It's true. It's all about being provocative. And if you take it as these are two clowns that are just trying to poke you with a stick until you say, stop poking me with a stick, you goddamn idiot, then it's – if you just take it as that, then it's fine. It's a TV show where two guys basically take scripted opposite sides or scripted ridiculous and more ridiculous sides, like you said, and go off and have their fun.
It's performance art. It's like it's a talent at this point.
It is. It's, I mean, look, they're making a lot of money doing it. And me and my stupid pride and, you know, the thought that I can't live with myself if I went out there and was disingenuous on TV. Like, I can't go out there and say stupid things like this. Like,
I could do it. I could do it with ease.
Oh, no, I see. Any stupid thing that I say is completely organic. Like, if I say something stupid, I mean it. And so maybe that's worse, but at least when I say something, I think it. I actually think the things that I say. And if I'm wrong, so be it. I'm wrong. If it seems outrageous, I at least will give you my rationale. But to be, and the thing that gets me, honestly, everything, I was fine with all of it. I said, this is just stupid. It's stupid. It's stupid. My trigger, what triggers me is the Kyrie knee thing, because it is completely wrong. It is completely wrong to say that he has a knee problem. Everything that happened last year was because of the medical equipment that was holding his broken patella together. He broke his kneecap when he was in Cleveland. It was in the final. Like, it was very publicized. Everybody knew that he broke his kneecap. The things that happened last year were because he had actual wires, foreign objects in his body that were causing irritation. And to the point where he's such a finely tuned athlete, he and others in his situation. You or I, if we suffered that injury, we would never know that those wires were there. But because he is an elite professional athlete, they were causing him problems because of the way his body works. So they had to take it out. And then the second thing was an infection, an actual infection at the site of the screws.
Sounds like two knee injuries, my friend. That sounds like a knee problem. And do you really want to give the Supermax to a guy with a knee problem, with a knee issue? I mean, I hate to say it, but Celtics might be better without Kyrie Irving.
So you do that so flawlessly. You're good at it.
That's why I say I think I could do it with ease. Like, I say a bunch of nonsense all the time. If they're going to pay me millions of dollars to say nonsense, it feels like an easy street.
Yeah, it does. I'm one of the idiots, I guess, that will put my pride before the payday and say, no thanks, I don't want the millions. You can have somebody else say outrageous things for $1 million.
Yeah, I say outrageous things for the art of saying outrageous things, not for the money.
Right, right. But if the money comes your way, you'll take it.
Oh, yeah, I can't turn it down.
Tracy McGrady, not quite as stupid when he's...
No, here's the thing. I want to give credit to The Jump. He came out and they did a segment on The Jump, but if you watch the full segment, the first half of the segment was about the Suns playing well. And like it was like... actually taking into the context of the situation and focused on like what's probably a better story is that the Suns have won four games for the first time in the past two decades. And so I appreciate that the jump is a higher quality program and actually focused on basketball. But then to fill the second half of the segment, they just went back to the same old nonsense of just like, whatever. What did Tracy McGrady actually say?
He basically said they lost their mojo and the Celtics
after two games.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they were the hottest team in the NBA. And all of a sudden after two games, and because they lost to the Suns, and I guess everybody that loses to the Suns is problematic now because
can't do it. Can't lose to the Suns.
I mean, it's not like the Celtics are the only team that have lost to the Suns. The Mavericks, who are everybody's darling right now. Oh, Luka. Oh, the Mavericks. They're so great. They lost to the Suns. The Grizzlies, the resurgent Grizzlies. Oh, my God, the Grizzlies. They lost to the Suns. The Bucks, second seed. Oh, man, Bucks. Man, Giannis, they're crazy. They're so good. They lost to the Suns. I mean, other teams have lost to the Suns. It sucks. They should not have lost to the Suns, but it's not like it's not like they lost to a college team. They lost to a team that is on a streak. They lost to a team when they have no big men left and a team that has a pretty good rookie big man. It's like shit happens. So
no, they lost their mojo, man. You can just You see them out there and just Kyrie's trying to do his best, but the other players need to step up. I mean, Jaylen Brown's not playing great, and they're clearly a faltering team, and just they can't. Do they have too many stars? I mean, can they lift these expectations? I don't know. Gordon Hayward's coming off the bench. It's so easy to say nonsense.
It's so easy to say nonsense. It really is.
Here's the thing. Neither Stephen A. in his long rant about why the Celtics were struggling, or T-Mac, when he was talking about it, no one mentioned, like, I think they casually mentioned Al Horford being out, but they don't, like, mention that as having a huge impact on the quality of the basketball the team's playing. Like, that feels like such a missing ingredient. And I was going to say I hate to bring it back to this. I don't hate to bring it back to this. That's a major reason why the Celtics are struggling. Al Horford is very, very good at basketball. Yep. And when he doesn't play, the offense is going to look stale and the defense is going to be worse. And so it's like it's not rocket science here. Like, you don't have to come up with a crazy new storyline. They're not struggling. I mean, they are struggling, but they haven't lost their mojo. Like, one win, they turn the game around, and then they, like, if they beat the Bucks, then they have their mojo back instantly, and you're not looking to trade Kyrie Irving. It's just when you're not, I guess because we're more involved day to day, we can do day to day takes, and they're not as absurd. But like when you get it from a national perspective, it's just it's bad.
Sometimes I think these elite players like Tracy McGrady are terrible analysts because, I mean,
I hate to say it, but you know who is victim of that is Paul Pierce.
Yeah,
he's not good.
He's not great. He's not great. He has his moments, but
he has his moments because he's Paul Pierce and we love him before it. But he's right. Like, in terms of like adding basketball analysis, I agree. Him and T-Mac are not the best. No. I mean, I think Chauncey Billups was pretty good, but
and see, that's the thing though. There, and I don't make this sound the wrong way because everybody has to work hard to get to this level, but for some guys, so much comes naturally that they just don't understand. That's why elite players never make a good coach. What elite player, what super megastar player has been a good coach? Have any?
Larry Bird.
Larry Bird's the only one. Larry Bird's the only one.
Jason Kidd was sure liked in Milwaukee.
But Larry Bird is such an exception because he surrounded himself with veteran assistants and took their advice and let them handle things. That he's the only exception because of how he was smart enough to say, I don't know shit about coaching. I'm going to surround myself with a bunch of great assistants, and then I'm going to take all of their input and then lead that way. Most of these guys are just terrible. Like, I almost said that like Charles Barkley.
Terrible.
Magic Johnson was the worst head coach. Like, he was a head coach for like 5 minutes and was just horrible. Any other elite player that tries to become a head coach, they struggle with this because they just don't understand the level of detail that some of the the role players need to understand. Like, great elite players don't have to be so in tune to the finest details because they're just too good. They don't need to pay attention to that. The role players, and even Chauncey, who was an elite role player, I would say, because he had to work really, really hard to be as good as he got. Those guys need every detail. The pick is like here, but you need to be like right here. And it's like imperceptible to most people, but they're like that little angle difference is what they understand. Like that's the difference between you getting to the basket and not getting to the basket. All of the little things that they have to study about tendencies so they can be really, really good. That's what makes them great coaches, as opposed to a T-Mac who's just like, hey, just give me the ball and I'm going to like cross over a few times and then I'm going to go dunk on somebody. Like, so they make terrible analysts because they just don't see the game the same way as other people. So things like losing their mojo, like that's something that would happen to T-Mac. Be like, oh, man, I just don't have it today. So I lost my mojo and I just kind of sucked. I'll get my mojo back and I'll be awesome again. That for him, that's like that's as detailed as it can get.
I don't know if it's like them seeing the game in a different way, but it certainly feels like the effort in terms of like what they're putting in to get better at being an analyst isn't there because you just tune in to watch, like you trust what T-Mac says because he's T-Mac and he was so great. So he has no need to like really bring the heat with like breaking down X's and O's. He can probably watch the Suns-Celtics game while watching a number of other games and be like, oh, the Celtics don't have it tonight. They don't have their mojo. And like he doesn't need to get any better because he's still going to be on television because he's T-Mac. And so it's just there's no like incentive for him to get better. But it's just not – I don't know. It's just – it's clear – like the answer is so obvious to me that it's just like – that feels like such – so lazy.
It is.
And I appreciate the jump for doing more, but – at least talking about the Suns. So the jump's way better than whatever it's Cold Pizza or whatever that show's called. shout out to Cold Pizza, by the way. Jay King, sending me to a pizza place without that doesn't have slices. My God. Sent me on a real goose chase earlier. It was not great.
Yeah. What was that one?
Pinkies in Medford.
Yeah. As we said off the air, I'll repeat it on the air. Suburban pizza places in Massachusetts just they're very rarely are going to sell slices because there's just no demand for them. But sometimes all you want is a slice or two of pizza. What are you going to get? Like a small? You're going to wait for them to sit there and cook a whole small?
I had no time for that.
You want to walk in and be like, two slices, please. That's it.
And now I'm eating Domino's right now because ever since you guys started talking about pizza on the last podcast, I've had a hankering for pizza. Ugh. And I thought, oh, Jay King's could help me out with this pizza recognition. I mean, Domino's, and I don't feel good about it.
I have a consistent, like, perpetual hankering for pizza. Like, it doesn't take much. You want pizza? Yes. I always want pizza. Like,
do you ever see the video of the Olsen twins when they're 6 years old singing about how much they want pizza, but it's really slowed down and it's, like, chopped and screwed?
No.
I highly recommend
I'm gonna have
all the listeners out there. I want pizza. P-R-Z-Z-A. It's a jam. I would highly recommend.
Okay. I'll look that up. I grew up in the pizza business. My dad's Greek. So, of course, I grew up in the pizza business. So, but I guess it's just ingrained in me. I have this genetic desire to consistently have pizza.
You ever been to Demos in Watertown Square?
I have not.
Solid Greek place. My neighbors were Greek, and they owned Demos. And you could get a mean shish kebab there.
Yeah, that's something that we Greeks make. I make a decent pizza. I make a decent pizza. I can make one of my own. I have a mixer downstairs.
Yasu to that, my friend.
One of these
that's
days,
the only Greek word I know. That's that and skata.
Nice one. That's a nice one. This is good. We'll teach you all the swears. One of these days we'll have a locked on kind of gathering around in my new place and I'll make us all pizza.
I used to work in a pizza place. I can throw some dough around, maybe add some toppings. See, I used to work at Otto's Pizza in the Square.
Oh, nice. See, I never threw the dough.
Never threw dough?
No. That's not how we made it.
I did it once or twice. I really messed it up.
We rolled it out and we stretched it out. We never did the whole throwing thing. That's an Italian thing, I think.
Oh, yeah. I just tried to do it for sport, but I was never good at it.
Okay. All right. We'll take a break. I got more yelling to do. I'm not done. I'm not done yelling. Up next, Anthony Davis rumors. I'm going to yell about Anthony Davis rumors. Stick with us on the Locked On Celtics podcast. The internet, again, undefeated when it comes to Anthony Davis rumors. Every time I turn around, there's an Anthony Davis rumor. Today, I read something. I don't even know where it was, or I don't even care to give it credit. They were suggesting trading Jason Tatum in an Anthony Davis deal, which I know you do whatever you can to get Anthony Davis, but at the same time, Tatum is one of your cornerstone guys. Like, you need a guy like him around. Beyond that.
Oh, my God. You're just started about talking about yelling about Anthony Davis rumors, but now I want to engage on this Anthony Davis rumor. Say Anthony Davis is like guarantees he's going to re-sign. Are you more likely to include Jason Tatum in a deal if he guarantees he's going to re-sign?
I guess it depends on the deal, but you're giving up such a foundational piece. I mean, you don't get these types of kids around very much. I mean, look what he's doing. It's his second year. He's a year and 3 months into his career, and look at all the things that he's trying to do. And he's still got so much that he can improve on. I don't want to give that up. At the same time, it's Anthony Davis. And
if you can get 4 years of Anthony Davis turning like 26 to 30, it's Anthony Davis. Like, I think you have to.
What's the deal is what I need to know.
It would have to be Tatum and then someone to match money, so probably Smart. I don't know if you – or you go somewhere else with, like, Horford or Hayward.
Yeah.
Horford makes the most sense, but I mean
– Horford goes straight up. If you include Horford in a trade for Anthony Davis, you're doing
then
that –
then it seems kind of absurd to also include Tatum because that seems like a lot of value.
Right, and –
I feel like it's Tatum, Smart, Rozier, and Pitts.
You know what? You can't trade Horford. I mean, you can sign and trade him, I guess, but if he opts out, then you can't trade him. You got to sign him.
Yeah,
first.
That's fair.
Yeah, you got to sign him first. So, I mean,
Tatum, Rozier, Smart.
Rozier is a restricted free agent. You got to unless you sign and trade him too, but. I don't. There are rules that I got to review the rules, but I think when you're a tax team, you can't sign and trade, or there are limits there that I have to double check.
Jerks with the god dang CBA. I'm just trying to create up a fake trade, putting zero thought into it.
I know,
and it's absurd. Just like all the restrictions.
You can put that.
It's
on
almost
EI.
Like we shouldn't.
Call EI. They'll listen to that.
It's almost like we shouldn't be talking about this situation because nothing's going to happen until he. Turns down his Supermax deal or something happens next summer.
Exactly. Because it's not happening. It can't happen for Boston until the summer anyway. And even then, we don't know that it's going to happen. He might take that extension. Like, why not, if you're Anthony Davis, say, okay, I will sign that extension. And then 3 months later say, okay, now trade me. Like, why not? Why would you pass up money unless you're Kawhi Leonard, who is somehow...
It's really hard to demand a trade with like 4 years on your contract, though, because they just have no...
But you're Anthony Davis.
So what's he going to do? Just not play?
No, you sign the contract, you play, and then in January you say, you know what? It's not going the way I thought it would. Trade me. And then trade deadline gets crazy, and if they trade him at the trade deadline or trade him in the summer, teams will line up for him because...
It could be a way to increase the like the value you're getting back from. Okay, I kind of get it.
I don't know.
Because then, like, if Anthony Davis on a contract, like if the Pelicans are going to trade that, then they're going to get such a bigger haul just because that's so much more valuable. So, but then you're also paying him $40 million a year, Who knows? It's all wackiness that we have no idea what's going to happen because it's many, many months away.
So the whole thing with me yelling at people writing about this is a lot of what we just talked about. It's just, it's not happening. It's not happening now. It's not going to happen at this trade deadline. It may not even happen this summer. It may not happen until the next trade deadline, if it happens at all. Like, at some point, he might force his way out. He might decline the Supermax, which would really create the frenzy. But it's not happening this season. It's not. And for the Celtics especially, it can't happen this season unless you're Max Kellerman and you trade away Kyrie Irving, which they won't. So just it's played out. The every angle has been covered. The Lakers want him. They have certain assets. The Celtics want him. We get it. When Woj says the Celtics have been hawking Anthony Davis since KD didn't sign with the Celtics, we knew that. We've known it. So every time he says it, we don't have to go crazy about it saying, oh my God, the Celtics want Anthony Davis. We know Danny Ainge wants Anthony Davis. Every team wants Anthony Davis. Enough. We get it. Stop writing about it. Stop talking about it.
Can we go from yelling at people on the internet to politely disagreeing with them on the internet?
Sure.
Let's talk about another trade proposal linked to the Celtics. This was Gary Washburn writing today in the Boston Globe, and his column is making the argument that the Celtics need to add an additional big man with the injuries to Baines and Horford. And the players he suggests are Tyler Zeller, Kendrick Perkins, who else is on there? Quincy Acey, Brandon Wright, perhaps. I think the Celtics will have will struggle to just with their lack of size, especially with how long Baines is out, and we don't know what like Horford is. I understand the general point, but the idea that they need to make a trade or need to sign someone just makes no sense to me. Especially with Yabu coming back, like I think Tice, Time Lord, and Yabu are serviceable enough, but like what is adding Tyler Zeller going to do? Kendrick Perkins is old. Kendrick Perkins like can't play. I respect the hell out of Gary, but I politely disagree.
I can explain all of this. See, the Time Lord has enraptured Gary Washburn. Washburn sits a few rows closer to the court than we do.
He gets that front row seat.
And so when you're in that front row seat, you get caught in that Time Lord kind of like time warp. So he's seeing what's happening in real time, but he's also caught in that time warp where he thinks those other players are still good.
Oh, that might be it.
Yeah. So we know that all of those players that he mentioned are trash at this point.
Oh, I mean, Tyler Zeller's got some historically soft hands. I got to give him credit for that.
He does. Right. He is very soft hands. Yes. But that's my explanation. That the Time Lord has kind of warped his perception of reality.
It doesn't make any sense to me, especially with Yabu coming back. I expect him to get minutes. The Celtics play better when they have like a stretch big. I don't see like adding a giant body like Kendrick Perkins or Tyler Zeller would at all be helpful.
Yeah.
Like you can play and deal with Robert Williams, like playing the role big. Maybe if they could add a stretch five, it would make a little bit more sense to me, a guy who could shoot and still defend the five, but right. That guy's not out there because that guy's super valuable.
Right. Everybody wants that guy. So why would he be out there? Kendrick Perkins, I love Perk. I love Perk. But, like, he is not the answer. And this is the best thing about Boston is that once we love a guy, we always love this guy. And he's forever going to be the guy that was in 2007, that 2008, where the Celtics were, you know, that championship team. And he's out there blocking shots and rebounding. That was 11 years ago. 11 years ago. And he was already a few years into his career at that point. His career is over, which sucks, but that's how it goes. Like, it's over with Perk. Just, I want Perk to be on TV put Perk in area 21 with KG and let those two just talk shit the whole day. I will watch it. I will pay him money to do it. That's his. That would be amazing television.
Perk's got an amazing voice. Perk's got an amazing voice, and he's got strong opinions. And I totally agree that we need more media from Perk.
Amazing. I want a book on tape read by Kendrick Perkins.
That would be fantastic.
Right?
And yeah, I don't need to see him in the Celtics lineup, but I do have to say, since we brought him up, he doesn't get hurt in Game 7. They win in 2010.
I strongly agree on that one. Lakers fans hate when I bring that up, but I strongly agree on that.
The Lakers got like 75 offensive rebounds in that game.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Pau Gasol, that's still pissing me off. 6 for 24.
I'm with you on that. Let's remember Perk for the good times. The good times. All right. That's it. Well, we'll end on that high note. And we'll end the podcast. This is the Friday show. It's a little goofy. It's a little high volume. I'd recommend turning down the volume. But if you've gotten to this point, then you already know you should have turned the volume down a long time ago and probably have. So thanks for listening, everybody. If you're a new listener and you've gotten to this point, thank you. Congratulations. You're crazy. But crazy enough to subscribe and listen to
this. Crazy like a fox.
Get that lemon tree yet. And regular subscribers, give us that 5-star rating wherever you can. Give us a 5-star rating and give us that good written review whenever you can do that. And share the podcast, spread the word, tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.